Good evening, everyone. It is 7:33 on Thursday, the 5th of December, 2019, and welcome to this meeting of the Finance, Audit and Risk Committee. We have received apologies from Councillor Kate Aspinwall. Is there any other apologies to be received?
Councillor Steve Deakin-Davis.
Thank you very much. And Councillor Kate Tarr. The minutes of the 16th of September 2019, can we take and approve the minutes as they currently read?
One amendment to the minutes.
One amendment?
I'm noted as being present, and then I'm noted as having St. George Davies as a sub. I wasn't present at the last meeting.
Okay, perfect. Has that been noted?
That's been noted.
Perfect. Are there any other amendments at all? So can we agree, please, to approve those minutes? Agreed. Agenda item number 3, notification of any other business. I have received none, so I'll move on to Chairman's announcements. In accordance with Council policy, this meeting is being audio recorded. Members of the public and the press may use their devices to film, photograph, or do a sound recording of the meeting. But please let me know you are doing this so that I can inform all present. Please do not use flash and disable any sound notifications that may emit from your device. Members are reminded that any declarations of interest in respect of any business set out in the agenda should be declared as either a disclosable pecuniary interest or declarable interest that are not required to notify the chairman of the nature of any interest declared at the commencement of the relevant item on the agenda. Members declaring a disclosable pecuniary interest must withdraw from the meeting for the duration of the item. Members declaring a declarable interest wishing to exercise a councillor speaking right must declare this at the same time as the interest. Move to the public area before speaking to the item and then must leave the room before the debate and vote. Public participation, we have not received any notification of that, so we will swiftly move on to agenda item 6. And Mr. Jennings, would you like to please present the shared anti-fraud plan to the committee?
I'm on now. Thank you, Chair. This report is an update with the delivery of the Council's anti-fraud plan for the current year. So the report itself refers back to the plan that was agreed by this committee in March. So the plan, I mean, the two main, sorry, apologies, Chair, the two main documents to refer to are the appendices, the performance stats for the service delivery and for the delivery of the plan. Members will find those with the appendices. The action plan for 2019-2020, there are three areas highlighted in gold as outstanding. Or just about in progress. Those relate to the review of policies, the e-learn training, and then the work that the Shared Anti-Fraud Service have been doing around the professionalisation of their staff. Those have all now moved to in train, so they're all should be yellow, which for us is business as usual. So actually the plan itself will be delivered in full by the end of the year.
What page are you currently?
These are the appendices, Chair. So they're the two documents at the end. So they are the action plan. I'm just trying to find it on your document, Chair. So yeah, these will be the PDFs that were attached. So these are appendices B, which is performance against the plan. So that's performance and the KPIs for the Shared Anti-Fraud Service.
Okay.
Amelia, were you going to put these on the big screen for me?
Thank
Fabulous.
You.
Whilst Amelia's doing that for me,
Sorry to interrupt you there. I think we've got
absolutely. You need some. You need to know what I'm looking at, and so do I at the moment. So whilst we're waiting for that, I'll just confirm that the plan will be delivered by the end of the year. There are some areas, as I mentioned, that are outstanding, and I'll address those when they come up. The council does have in place up-to-date and effective policies around counter fraud, anti-money laundering, bribery. And those members that were at the training session earlier, we were discussing some of those in a bit more detail. We do have one FTE investigator working from the Shared Anti-Fraud Service across North Hearts Council's services, and that officer is supported by a manager. That's Darren. Unfortunately, Darren can't be with us this evening because his son's poorly. So Darren supports that officer. Fantastic. So I'll refer to that in a moment. If I come back to that, please, Amelia. So within the SAFS team, we also have intelligence officers, data analysts, and an accredited financial investigator. All those officers support the investigator that's based at North Hearts District Council. To date, we've received 2.1 within your report. You'll see we've received 43 allegations of fraud being committed against the local authority. Actually, at present time, that's now risen to 55. And in those tables, 1 and 2, section 2.10 of the report, you'll see that where the type of fraud that's been reported, so we've got mainly council tax or housing benefit related matters with some housing, some blue badge issues. And then the sources of allegations, who's actually reporting fraud to us. The split of fraud being reported is quite good because it's showing that the public are reporting fraud to us, as our staff, which is great because it means, you know, there are two main sources of intelligence outside of the proactive work that we undertake. So that's really good at the moment. We've closed 52 investigations so far this year and identified fraud losses or savings combined of around £52,000. That's quite low, but we do have a significant number of cases that are ongoing at the moment with estimated fraud losses or savings just over £220,000. So there is quite a lot of work in train at present, and a lot of that work is linked to joint working with the DWP, where they're investigating housing benefit fraud, we're investigating the council tax support fraud or single person discount fraud. So there's some quite high value cases in there. Council is making good use of financial penalties that are available to them. So under the Local Government Finance Act, they can apply penalties where people have committed quite small scale, low level offences or have failed to report things but have a duty to report that. And the council is very active in applying financial penalties when it's appropriate to do so. So far, 13 penalties have been applied this year for just over £5,600. And again, they're targeted at those people where there has been some evidence of a deliberate attempt to deceive, but the actual value is quite low, so it's an alternative to prosecution. So we see that as quite a valuable tool in the authorities' armoury to not only to remind people about their duty to report changing circumstances, but also to enforce that. If they don't do it, there is a financial penalty as well. We did run a blue badge campaign across the whole county in May and June of this year. We ran there was an amnesty around blue badges, which did see some blue badges being returned to the authority. And we conducted patrols as well, and we did that with the parking enforcement officers at North Hearts District Council. That did not in North Hearts, I'd like to say, but some other authorities. We did identify some blue badges being misused as part of those patrols. The important thing is we saw a 400% increase in reported blue badge abuse in that month. So clearly, that little mini campaign that we ran did encourage people to report or surrender blue badges that were being misused. So we saw that as a huge success. We ran Fraud Awareness Week in November this year as part of the International Fraud Awareness Week through social media again, working with North Hearts District Council's comms team to push those messages out. And that saw an increase on our website of 200% in November. So a big bump in visitors to our website. Whether that turns into actual reported fraud, we don't know yet, still early days, but it certainly saw a big increase in people hitting our website. big project for the authority and for the Shared Anti-Fraud Service this year has been delivery of the National Fraud Initiative. So this is towards the end of your report. National Fraud Initiative is, as it suggests, a national exercise undertaken by the Cabinet Office. It's every 2 years. And it does involve the collection of data from across local government, a number of other organisations, the matching of that data over a period of time, and then the reports coming back to each local authority to resolve. For North Harts District Council, it was just over 1,300 matches, so they are individual reports that need to be reviewed and verified by officers. And just towards the end of November, we'd been able to look at over 1,000 of those. It's only delivered £18,000 worth of savings, so it's not a huge return on investment. However, what that does do is provide lots of assurance around those services where we are data matching that actually that fraud isn't in the system. So it's a positive message. And we've been holding meetings to roll out the fraud hub as well for the authority. So the authority will join the Hertfordshire Fraud Hub. So rather than conducting the NFI exercise every 2 years and having to wait for that huge slew of work that arrives, we can actually turn that into business as usual. So we'll conduct the data matching much more frequently. The results will come out. We'll be able to deal with those in bite-sized chunks rather than trying to deal with 1,300 reports of fraud suggestions of fraud or error. And that will help us certainly around prevention, around council tax, housing applications, and some further assurance around payroll and creditor data that the council holds. If I can just refer to the documents up on the big screens at the moment, this is our progress with the delivery of the plan. So you'll see on the right-hand side, this document is taken straight from the plan, so this is what we agreed to do, was agreed by officers in March of this year. The right-hand side just gives us an indicator of where we are with delivering that particular item. So hopefully the members will be assured that where we've got green, we've done it, it's complete. Where we've got yellow, it's business as usual. So although we're undertaking that work, it's never going to be complete. It's just ongoing, but it's in train. And those items are highlighted in gold are where we were a bit slow with the take-up on those, or not sure about that. But actually, I've been spoken to Ian recently, and from my own knowledge as well, all those things are now in place. So they've all moved to green or yellow. So as far as the plan's concerned, everything that we intended to do this year at the authority, whether it was my service or whether it's officers doing that, that will all be complete. And that does follow the theme that we were talking about earlier with members around acknowledge, prevent, pursue, which is the theme that comes out of the Fighting Fraud and Corruption Strategy, and the six C's that sit below that, and then specific activity within the authority to show that we are doing those things that help us protect the authority against fraud. So that's, hopefully members are happy with that. It's immediately the second document on there. That's our KPIs for the year. So again, mainly green or yellow. One area around, Amelia, I'm just getting excited there. And you just, the red area is in reported fraud. And again, one of the members mentioned this earlier, we've got a target of 100 allegations of fraud to be reported into us. It's an important target for us because it shows that people are able and confident they can report fraud to the authority and it will be looked at. We set ourselves a target. It's probably just below where we expect to be at the moment. So we've indicated that in red, but I'm hopeful that by the end of the year we'll be pushing towards 100, because historically for North Harts we're sort of in 120, 130 each year. So although I'm quite happy to take the credit, if we're not getting as much fraud reported in, clearly we've dealt with it. It's not an issue for North Harts anymore. Although I suspect that may not be the case. And that's my report, Chair, unless I've got questions.
Perfect.
For you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions at all that anyone would like to raise? Councillor Weeks.
Thank you, Chairman. Nick, on the main report, page 14 and 15, 210, we say that we've had 43 allegations in the first two quarters. Compared with our cohorts, we're doing quite well, aren't we? I know that there probably is fraud out there that we don't know about, but on those figures there, where one particular council has 116 referrals already, it looks as if we're doing okay.
It's always difficult to tell with allegations of fraud, because obviously this is people suspecting something, whether it's a member of staff that suspects there's a fraud in something that they're dealing with, a customer, or whether it's a member of the public who is reporting a suspicion of fraud to us. It's always quite difficult. I don't know whether this is not answering your question at all, Councillor.
No,
Mix,
I don't think there is an answer because, as I say, I think there is fraud out there. It's just not been identified as such.
As I was always discussing earlier, and the graph I've shown you, it's up and down. You know, some years it's higher, some years it's lower. Yeah. I expect we'll see some more activity in the second half year, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that we ran that campaign in November, which we'll still see in the after effects of. And we've got some more activity planned in the fourth quarter as well. So I'm expecting we'll push towards our total of 100. If that's a good thing or not, I don't really know. I can't answer that question.
No, I don't think there is an answer, Nick, but thank you anyway.
Perfect. Are there any other questions at all? Okay, then are members happy to note the work of the council and the shared anti-fraud service in delivering the anti-fraud plan 2019-2020?
Yep.
Perfect. Mr. Jennings, is there anything else you'd like to stay this evening for on the agenda?
No, but what I have promised, Amelia, is I'm going to send you an electronic copy of this document for members to read. This is the LGA's, Local Government Association's, Councillors Workbook on Bribery and Fraud. It's a fantastic workbook because it is quite literally a workbook that you can work through. It's got loads of pictures in it. So I'm going to send that out for members to look at electronically, but I'd be happy for that to be shared across all members as well. And obviously, if there's any questions that come out of that, happy to deal with those, Chair.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we will then move on to agenda item 7, which is North Parks District Council annual audit letter. Mr. Vattel, would you like to present for us? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good evening to members of the committee. Just by way of introduction, for those of you unfamiliar with the annual audit letter, so this document basically summarises the work that we have completed on your most recent financial statements, which is the 31st of March 2019. You'll see from the date on the front on page 19 that we actually agreed this back in September with Ian. And this document really just summarises the output of the work that we did. If you remember when I came to the July committee on the 29th, I think that was, I was saying that we were virtually completed with the audit. And as you'll see in that report, I did then subsequently sign your accounts on the 30th of July, which enabled you to publish your accounts by the due date that's required for you. So that's very pleasing to be able to say that. I think the other kind of key messages were that we didn't really find any kind of issues with your accounts. We were happy with the annual governance statement, and in terms of value for money arrangements, we gave you a clean bill of health. So really, it was a very positive outcome for your audit on the 31st of March 2019. The letter does include a little bit of a looking ahead, and actually we had a planning meeting with Ian and Antonio this morning about the 19-20 audit, which we will kick off in earnest in February. No real kind of surprises, I think, for next year either, although I'm aware, and it's on later in your agenda, but you're increasing commercial investment plans, which obviously we will consider as part of our value for money work for 19-20. Other than that, Chair, I'm happy to take questions.
Perfect. Are there any questions at all from members? No, I think the comments that have been made and that were also made in July is a real reflection of the positive work that the officers in the finance department are doing. So I'm very grateful for those comments both today and in the previous committee. So are members happy to consider the annual audit letter? I think that's agreed. So agenda item 8, the SIAS internal audit progress report. Mr. Chalky, would you like to present?
Thank you, Chair. So I'll just take you through our progress report. The purpose of this is for members to note the progress to the 15th of November. I'll give you an update on any figures that have changed in the period since then. To note the amendments that are contained in the report and the implementation status of the high priority recommendations. So I'll start at paragraph 2.2 on page 41. The table there details the final reports that we've issued since the last committee in September. So there's three in there, two with good assurance, which is the highest level of assurance, and one with satisfactory. All recommendations included in there have been agreed with officers with action plans attached. moving down to paragraph 2.5 on page 42. We haven't raised any high priority recommendations in the period since the last committee, and there are three high priority recommendations that remain in progress. One relates to the corporate debt management audit that we completed, one relating to museum service, and one relating to the time recording system. Appendix B provides an update on the progress of those recommendations, two of which have got revised target dates. All are work in progress, but two have extended the target date slightly in order to ensure the work's completed as expected. Paragraph 2.8 on the same page outlines there's a number of amendments that we've made to the audit plan in the period since the last committee. So there's two audits that have been cancelled, parking strategy and enforcement and data quality of performance information. On parking strategy, it was felt that now wasn't the right time to complete that audit because there's still work ongoing in that service area. So that is likely to be included in the audit plan for next year. The data quality performance information I mentioned later in the report, and I'll come on to that, but it didn't start when it was expected to start, and another audit has taken priority over that, so we made the decision to cancel that one and add the days into a new project that was deemed slightly more urgent.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's wait if we can till the end. If there is something burning, then please do put your hand up. Thank you.
As a result of those two cancellations, we've added four audits to the plan. We've added Workman's Hall, which came at the request of management because the accounts for that now are above the threshold that requires an audit certificate for those accounts. We've added insurance and development management that came off of the reserve list as a result of the parking strategy audit being cancelled. And we've added an audit on care line stock, which has replaced the data quality performance information. Moving down the report, we get to paragraph 212 to 215. I've included paragraphs here just to summarise our performance year to date and give a bit more context to where we are, because as you've probably noted in your reading before the committee, the number of projects completed is quite low for this stage of the year. So I just wanted to add a bit of context around that so members are aware of why I've said that our performance is on profile, even though it seems like a low performance numbers. So this year, for various reasons, a lot of audits are taking place in quarter four. So there's 27 projects included in the whole audit plan for the year, 12 of which are due to start in quarter four. So that's 44% of our work is definitely going to take place in quarter four. Originally, it wasn't planned that way. And as I say, there's various reasons why that's happened. And I've listed those at paragraph 2.13. So we had a management request to postpone one audit. The removal of the parking strategy and enforcement audit and replacement with two audits means we're now doing two rather than one in that period. Including the care line stock audit has also added another project into quarter four because internally we couldn't resource it earlier because it was only agreed last month, I think. And similarly, the one day on Workman's Hall takes place in January at the same time as King George V playing field. So four audits have been added into, all new audits have been added into quarter four, which has bumped the numbers up. Similarly, there's internal matters from our side that have caused two audits to be affected. So revenues, that audit, we've got a particular officer who's has a specialism in that area that we wanted to do that piece of work. Resourcing didn't allow him to do that before January, so we agreed it with management that could be shifted. And similarly, we had some HR related issues with the auditor that was assigned to data quality and performance information audit, which meant that didn't proceed as it was expected. So therefore, we cancelled it and replaced it with an audit that was requested from management. Again, that went into quarter four, as I've mentioned before. So there are reasons why it's as backloaded as it is, and I would like to provide the members of this committee with some assurance that all the audits that are planned for quarter four have all been allocated to either our internal team or BDO, our partners. Initial planning's begun on all audits. I believe the ones that have been allocated to BDO, start dates have been agreed with officers, so we know when the field work's going to take place. And we are confident that that work will be completed, albeit a lot of it will be completed in quarter four. So as we move down and we get to the performance table, as I said, you'll see for the planned projects reaching draft report, I have noted that we're on profile. We should only have we would only have expected to have completed 9 projects at the time this report was written. And if I can shift you all the way down to Appendix C, where we have our timetable of when audits take place.
Do you mind giving us a page?
Yeah, sorry,
number.
The page number is 54.
54, thank you.
I can explain why 9 is where we'd expect to be. So anything that took place in that first half of the year, we would expect to be completed by now. The audits that commenced in October, at the time the report was written, typically we wouldn't have expected those to have been completed. The life cycle of our work tends to be 2 to 3 months. So the work that has started in October, we would expect to be finishing this side of Christmas, which all bar expenses is on profile for. We have managed to complete the Integra 2 piece of work, which has replaced the temporary accommodation that is now partway through field work. So that's why the 9 is where we'd expect to be, because we haven't done temporary accommodation, but we have completed Integra 2, so that balances out a little bit. Other than that, we've moved a few audits on from where they are here. As I say, temporary accommodation is now partway through field work. Benefits is partway through field work. And the SAFS joint review that's taking place, that is in quality review, but it's at the final stages of quality review. So hopefully by the end of next week, the week after, a draft report should be out with members of the SAFS board to review and comment on.
Thank you very much. Councillor Weeks, did you want to...
A couple of things, if I may, Mark. First of all, on page 42 of the report, the audit on parking strategy and enforcement has been cancelled.
Correct,
now, cancelled by management. Can I just question if that is the right thing to do? Is it ethical that management can cancel a proposed audit?
Yes.
Clearly it is, because it's happened. Yes. Is it correct?
The reason being is that audit planning takes place in December, January, February time. So that's quite far in advance of when audits are due to take place. So typically we'll plan audits, and during the discussions with service directors, we'll be talking about what's happening that year. And if things don't progress as expected, or as quickly, or as thoroughly, or other priorities take over, the service may not be in a position to facilitate an audit at that time of year. So the audits that have been cancelled will get done, but they're just not being done this year. They'll be put into next year's plan. Don't know whether Ian has any other comments on that, but yeah, it might it's fine for audit to be cancelled.
It's just that, going back on that, there is no mention of the audit coming back again in the future, but from what you've just said, it will come back.
It'll be part of our planning discussions for next year. Yeah,
sorry Ian.
I would expect it to come back next year. I expect it to be a part of the shortlist for next year. It's merely the fact that it's an audit of the parking strategy with a new administration and a different way of looking at the parking strategy. It's not where it should be. There's no point auditing something that's not there yet. So until it's there, we'll not auditing it.
And could I?
Yeah, you may.
The other thing is on Appendix B, Item 2, the museum services, the refurbishment thereof. This has been something that has been wanted to be done for some considerable years. the exhibits that are stored are deteriorating due to the damp conditions of the building and that sort of thing. So I can't impress enough upon the administration, if you like, the importance of getting this in for next year. Must be done, otherwise the exhibits are going to deteriorate to be useless.
Thank you, Councillor Jarvis.
Just two observations. Whereas I'm sure audit's a wonderful thing, it's not actually the audit that will stop the stuff from deteriorating. It's actually doing something about the museum store that's had made no progress for so many years. So we actually need to, I think we all understand there's an issue without an audit. The audit needs to take place, but we need to change the store as well. The other point I was going to make was in terms of moving things from year to year, I understand you only have a detailed plan on a year-by-year basis. Do you have a longer forward plan about the things that you kind of had penciled in for future years? So for things like the parking strategy, it's clear that there is an intention to do that at some time in the future, and there may well be other things which it would be appropriate to consider for next year or maybe even the year after.
Yeah, you segued nicely into the thing I was going to talk about after this report. So audit planning is due to start just after Christmas. I'll be contacting the service directors for any input on areas where they need assurance. I'll also try and circulate something around this committee to get any views on where you would like assurance. But essentially, to answer your question, during the planning meetings we have with officers, we look predominantly at what's going on in the coming year, what we're going to audit in the coming year. But part of our conversations is, well, if it's not appropriate this year, is it appropriate for the following year? And that'll be the starting point of our discussions for that year. So there'll be things that we discussed in January 2019 that may appear in the 2021 plan, because we already had the preliminary discussions and it was decided that actually now's not the right time to do it, because of, like Ian's explained, if we're looking at a strategy, for example, and it's not yet written, then we might as well wait until that's done. But if we know that's going to happen, we've got all the notes from the planning meetings we had last year that will inform what we start discussing this year. So there is a sort of, it's not necessarily written down, but there is a forward plan. It's considered as we're discussing things. Yeah,
I think I'd quite like it to be written down, but as I think Michael raises a reasonable point about the fact that something has been moved, and we all know that it's going to happen in future, but from a point of view of making sure that it's clear what's going to happen, it seems to me that it would be a good thing if, where we had the intention to an audit in a future year, if we recorded that, excepting that when the future year arrives, it might change.
Yeah.
But I think actually it's better to be written down somewhere rather than just everyone has a kind of private understanding.
To be fair, that was an oversight in this report. I should have made the comment that audit and also the data quality one, I believe we're planning to carry forward to next year as well. I should have noted that in the report, so that was an oversight on my part.
Thank you. So are both Councillor Weeks and Jarvis satisfied with the answers being given?
Yeah.
Perfect. Do we want to make a further recommendation at all that any extra gets added into these reports, or are we satisfied with what's been said? So,
the plan should be for the current year.
Put your mic
on. Yeah.
Can you put your mic on?
No, sorry.
the plan obviously sets out what's going to be audited in the present year, but if there are items which it is expected will be audited in future years, then that ought to be noted in the plan as well.
Okay. So, let's add that to the recommendations, if we may. So we'll take the recommendations, the first three recommendations on block, which are that the Finance, Audit and Risk Committee note the internal audit progress report for the period to 15th of November 2019. We note the proposed amendments to the 2019-20 annual audit plan, and we note the implementation status of high priority recommendations. Do we all agree to that? Perfect. And
Chair, can I just say the next committee that I come to will be bringing the draft audit plan. So as part of that report, I'm sure we can include an appendix on areas that we've considered as part of this year, but will potentially be in a forward year.
Okay, that's fine. I think we'll be satisfied with that. Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much. Is there anything else you would like to stay for this evening?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
You're more than welcome to go home and have your dinner.
Thanks very much.
We'll move on to agenda item number 9, which is the proposed amendments to the contract procurement rule. And Mr. Ramtahal will present.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Gavin Ramtahal, the legal commercial team manager. And the report at agenda item 9 sets out some proposed changes to the council's contract procurement rules. The proposed changes are relatively minor, so I'll run through them in turn and then take any questions that councillors may have. Also, the supplementary agenda item contains a copy of the rules with track changes so that the changes are easier to spot. So at 8.2 of the report, the proposed change to rule 2.4 is to ensure that any non-compliance is only reported to the council's monitoring officer, who may also consult with the service director for resources if appropriate. And the reason for that change is to streamline the process for reporting non-compliance, and also because non-compliance potentially may result in disciplinary action, that helps preserve the confidentiality of the process. The change in section 3 of the rules introduces the principles of locality and environmental protection, and the requirement now would be for officers to consider the extent to which the principles of locality and environmental protection can be incorporated and promoted in the procurement process and the performance of the contract. The section is fairly brief because the contract procurement rules is a high level document which is aimed at compliance. The detail of how we will achieve the implementation of that new section will be set out in the procurement strategy, which we're hoping to bring forward early in the new year. Section 8.4 sets out some additional guidance that's been put in the rules to help officers appreciate the importance of assessing suppliers' viability and financial risks, so to put more of an emphasis on making sure that we are considering that in the process. And section 8.5 of the report section 8.5 of the report proposes a change to section 29 of the rules to allow service directors to extend contracts by up to 24 months, up to a value of 200,000. And the reason for that change is to give service directors more flexibility in being able to manage their contracts with extensions. As we found, 12 months extensions are not common, and often suppliers need more than 12 months extensions for it to be a viable option. There are some additional safeguards that have been put into section 29 around making sure that service directors consider the council's overall interests in terms of whether that extension might affect what other service areas might be planning to do. The safeguards in there also ensure that service directors must consider whether an extension would give the council the best value option, and also compliance with procurement law. So those are the proposed changes to the rules. So if members have any questions, happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions at all, Councillor Weeks?
Thank you very much, Chairman. Gavin, in the room next door, we were told or reminded that procurement fraud
runs into billions of pounds each year. I accept what this new proposed rule, these proposed rules, are an attempt to streamline things, but that's not to the detriment of security against fraud, is it at all? I mean, we've looked at that aspect as well, have we, to reduce the possibility of fraud in procurement in coming up with this document.
I haven't. My own experience is I haven't seen any real evidence or fraudulent practices in the procurement process. There are a number of safeguards in that process. So every commissioning officer would consult with legal and procurement and finance at the start of procurement processes, and all those officers will feed into that process. Each process goes through the council's intend system. It's visible to all the officers, and that intend system keeps a record of the entire process from start to finish. So I don't see that there's an issue with procurement fraud at the council. I think there are significant safeguards in place in my view. But.
Thank you. Would you like to follow that up, Councillor Weeks? You're fine. Councillor Jarvis, did you want to say something?
Yes, on 8.4, where we're talking about supplier viability and risk, I mean, it talks about processes to be used above the AJEU thresholds.
Yeah.
I mean, there are clearly some contracts which are smaller than that, yeah, which have, because of their nature, have particular risks attached to them.
Yeah.
So do we have a defined process there? And clearly it needs to be one that assesses the situation and figures out what the best way forward is. You know, there's no way to completely eliminate this risk.
We do credit check all suppliers. The difficulty with below OG threshold procurements is the public contract regulations effectively banned pre-qualification questionnaires for procurements below threshold, and the rationale for that was to try and increase competition and open up access to contracts. That's not to say we can't assess the finances of those contractors that bid for low value contracts. We can, but the way we do that has to be proportionate to the contract value and get that balance right between improving access to the contracts but also making sure the authority is protected. So what the legislation says we can do is ask what they call suitability assessment questions. So we can check their finances, but it's got to be done in a proportionate way.
And that's set out in the details.
It's okay. Procurement law. It's in the regulations that we've got to do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions at all? No, then are we as a committee happy to consider the proposed changes and recommend their adoption to full council?
Great.
We are. Perfect. Would you like to stay for any more of the meeting at all?
No, I'd like to go home for my tea as well.
You're more than welcome.
Thanks
to
very
have
much.
You dinner. Thank you very much. We now move on to agenda item 10, which is the draft budget, and this will be presented by Mr. Cooper.
Thank you, Chair. I will start off in section 8 on page 102. In this section, running from 8.1 to 8.3, a series of bullet points with lots of assumptions, the sort of punchline of which is the table in 8.3, which is our current assumptions around funding for the years 2020 to 2021 onwards. I would point out the recommendation, so paragraph 8.4 and recommendation 2.1 should be slightly worded to say especially significant for 2021-22 onwards. It's not 2021-22 is a special year. Any time beyond that is uncertain. So all of those years after that, we just don't really know. We can only make a prudent guess at this stage and hope for the better and pray it's not any worse. In terms of paragraphs from 8.6 and the section titled Revenue Savings and Investment Proposals, as you remember from the MTFS, which agreed by full council in September, we're aiming for net savings of £900,000 over the 4-year period. That was on the basis of not knowing what was going to happen, particularly in next year. That's now we shifted a year further back. So it takes the pressure off a bit, but kind of that broad headline, I suppose, still remains in some form. What you'll note, and those of you at the budget workshops have seen the sort of full list before, I'm given a chance to comment on them in more detail, is that there are a series of investments as well as savings, and the sort of net total is actually a net increase in spend, which is covered in paragraph 8.12. You will note that in appendix B is the comments from those workshops, and cabinet in considering this version of the budget, and obviously you yourself in would want to make recommendations to them, to note the comments made by both the joint administration group and the Conservative group in considering those proposals when they were put forward. I do note in the report that in reaction to the sort of net result, the joint administration did have a budget workshop and then some further follow-up meetings, and therefore the comments contained there are the accumulation of those meetings as well, rather than boring you with the precise process about it went through. It's just all summarised in one, so that's more helpful in terms of presentation. So moving back to the main report. And a broken tablet, so I have to scroll back, it's not working. There we go, going backwards. So the section on page 105 makes a quick dip into capital programme. The relevance of that is to see whether the capital programme could be afforded with from capital reserves and new capital receipts, because if it can't, we need to borrow, and then that has knock-on revenue implications in terms of interest payments and minimum revenue provision. As noted there, with the exception of the proposed investment into commercial property or our own property, it can all be afforded, albeit in some years it's quite tight from existing capital receipts, and therefore there's no knock-on implications, because it's assumed that any new commercial property investment will at least exceed the cost of borrowing and minimum revenue provision plus a margin for risk on top. It's not factored in here, because then that means that both sides of the equations are in there, so it's a nice fair way of doing it. So once we've done that, in paragraph 8.17 on page 106 and table 3, just the comments from the two workshops on the capital proposals, put them on the table because there weren't actually that many of them. So rather than a long, long list with not a lot to say, just put on the table there. And then the final section of the report is in relation to sort of the summary position, and what all that means is a conclusion. One small change since I wrote the report is we now have received our pension valuation report for next year and onwards for 3 years. The percentage contribution to pensions we have to make, percentage of payroll, hasn't changed, but the lump sum we make, which is mainly in relation to past service costs, i.e. those pensioners that have left us and have their pension paid, for which we didn't quite put enough in the scheme when they were working for us, is just over £1 million, and that is going to increase by inflation over the 3 years, which actually increases the funding gap at the end of that 3 year period by a further £84,000 as a result of that increase. So not a huge amount, but obviously more to add to the budget gap as it stands. And then the key paragraph really for me in terms of this budget is 8.25. As the council's chief finance officer, I'm required to sign off the budget, both in terms of a balanced budget for 1 year, but also looking at a balanced budget across the medium term. I'm completely happy with the budget for next year. It's looking like we'll actually have a surplus of funding because of the quirks about how the way the funding cutoffs are going to work, but looking like potentially a significant budget shortfall over the medium term, with a £1.1 million gap potentially in 2021-22, albeit I'm looking at that actually being absorbed over 4 years to get back to a balanced budget because of our reserve levels. So as highlighted in that paragraph 8.25 on 107, wanted reassurance to the administration that they're prepared to look at ways of that budget could be balanced over the medium term, and that sort of sets out the commitment made by the joint administration. Hopefully when they meet as cabinet next week, that they are prepared to look at formally a full review of the budgets in next year, such that they can, we've got a plan to achieve a balanced budget in the medium term, and I expect them to agree to that, and therefore that gives me greater confidence about, when it comes to February, about recommending the 1 year budget, and there are plans in place to deliver a balanced budget over the medium term. That is what I want to say in terms of the report, but happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Councillor Weeks.
Can I just ask through you, Chairman, what recommendation are we looking to provide here this evening?
So I believe that all the decisions for this report are to be made by Cabinet, so we are putting forward any comments or things that we believe should be...
Comments for Cabinet.
Comments, yeah.
Is that right? Okay. Well, I mean, I don't disagree with the recommendations here, but I don't agree with some aspects of the proposed budget as such. Shall I just leave it at that and...
I'm more than welcome for you to air
but
those.
But I'm not being asked to agree the budget tonight, am I?
No.
In any that, way. So
the budget will be agreed at full council.
Yeah, I'm happy for it to go ahead to cabinet. Yeah.
Okay. So would you like to air your views now in FAR, or would you like to?
No, I'll save it if I may, Chairman. Thank you very much.
That's fine.
We have already aired our comments in the.
Well, nevertheless, we will have the opportunity to verbally. Speak at cabinet at council.
At council.
I'm sure you will take.
Thank you, Steve.
Are there any other questions at all for the report or for Mr. Cooper? No. So, is this committee happy to forward on the draft budget with no comments?
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. That's agreed. So we will now move on to agenda item number 11, which will be the second quarter revenue monitoring 2019-2020, presented by Mr. Chemper.
Pronunciation. Thank you, Chair. Good evening, everyone. As the title says, this is the revenue monitoring as at the second quarter. And as ever, the key numbers are in the executive summary. So at quarter two, we're forecasting to spend a net spend $360,000 less than the working budget, with an ongoing impact beyond this year of $46,000 increase, and there are two carry forwards totaling $142,000 requested to be carried forward from this year into next, which more in the report anon. In terms of what comprises that $360,000 underspend variance, the more significant variances are listed, itemised, and explained in Table 3. On page 139. You'll see that the biggest numbers relate to waste services and the waste contract, where we made some provision at the contract outset for ad hoc service provision, and the experience to date has been we haven't quite needed all of that provision that we made. And you'll also note the AFM income receipt in this year, significantly above the budgeted expectation. The zero in terms of the ongoing impact is because that additional income, or adjusting the income estimates to match our current performance compared to other authorities in Hertfordshire, is within the efficiency proposals that within the draft report that Ian just presented. And then just to mention the significant variance the other way in respect of income from Hitchin Town Hall, where again, based on our experience to date, we're adjusting that income to reflect the current level of activity. You'll notice that the ongoing impact is slightly smaller, because we're hoping that now the facility is fully operational and the museum's fully open, that income will grow in future years. Paragraph 8.3 on page 143 gives you some background to recommendation 2.4, where we're requesting to write off, Cabinet is asked to write off the 130k debtor with Coinco, who used to collect our income from car parking machines. They went bust in November 2014 and held on to our 130k. At the time, we didn't hold out much hope of getting any of that money back, so we provided for it fully. So in terms of the impact on the council's finances, the impact on the balance sheet of writing off the debt, it's net zero because there's a corresponding decrease in the provision for bad debt acquired. Paragraph 8.4 confirms that we're expecting to deliver all the efficiencies, 610k worth of efficiencies agreed in the budget for this year back in February. Paragraph 8.5 lets you know that we're now expecting 74k of the 699k worth of budget carried forward from 18-19 to not now be spent. Most of that relates to parking lines and signs, and it's mentioned in table 3 where the project is ongoing, and so it's requested to carry that budget forward again into next year. And then the other element relates to Arts Warmer Homes project, where now the project is off the ground, the installations will be funded from grant funding, so the 10 of the 13k carried forward we no longer think we require. Paragraphs 8.6 to 8.8 give you an update on the key corporate financial health indicators, essentially the key income streams for the council. The only change from quarter one is in respect of planning application fees, which is now amber status because the receipts in the first half of the year slightly below what we'd expect in the budget, but this may change, hence it's an amber status rather than a red, depends on activity in the second half of the year. Report then goes on to give an update on the collection fund position, where in terms of council tax we're expecting just a small deficit, and in terms of business rates, while the sort of level income collected is in line with estimates, we're projecting a deficit because we made an adjustment at the end of last year to increase our provision for appeals. But the fact that income is in line with estimates is good news in terms of the Hertfordshire business rates pilot, where the gain that hopefully we make from being in the pilot is dependent on business rates being in line with expectation. But at this point in time, it's still subject to change because it's not just us, it's performance of all the other Hertfordshire authorities in terms of collecting business rates. So we're not yet in a position to say with certainty what that gain will be. And then finally, just to mention table 5 and paragraph 8.13 in terms of what this means for the general fund balance at the end of the year, 7.8 million, which is very healthy projected balance. And that was all I was going to mention, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Nope. So are we happy to put this report forward to Cabinet with no further comment? Perfect, that's agreed. Thank you very much. Agenda item number 13, Risk and Opportunities Management Update. Sorry? Oh, I missed one. I do apologise. Agenda item 12, the Investment Strategy, Capital and Treasury Report, again presented by Mr. Chum.
Thank you, Chair. Again, all the key numbers are in the summary and the recommendations. Essentially, we're planning to spend, we're forecasting to spend less capital than we were, and that's primarily because of reprofiling of schemes. And you'll see on table 2, on page 152, you've got a breakdown of those schemes that are being reprofiled, totaling about 1.369 million being pushed into next year. And perhaps more relevantly is that those changes in table 3, which itemise changes in actual planned cost of schemes, estimate cost of schemes, where you'll see the big change is the removal of the 498k capital allocation for the Hitchin Swim Centre car park, The original scheme was essentially vetoed by the planning inspectorate, and we haven't come up with an alternate, a viable alternative. So at this stage, we're requesting to take it out of the programme, and that makes up the majority of the 567k reduction in spend on those projects. Paragraph 8.6, it should be table 4, it's table 3, confirms what we're that we're still going to have some money left essentially at the end of this year. That 8.5 million in our own internal capital reserves is estimated to reduce down to 4 million by the end of this year. The report then goes on to give you an update on the treasury management position. So that's in 8.9 to 12. Just to mention in 8.10 that whilst we did exceed the maximum limit on, according to the strategy, what we can have in our current account for one day only. That was essentially because we didn't have anywhere else to put it and we needed it again in 1 or 2 days' time. Paragraph 8.11 then tells you what we're actually generating from those cash investments. So we're forecasting 0.372 million and we're achieving an average interest rate of 1.13% on the investments out currently. And then the report gives you a breakdown of where those investments are held and the various status of the institutions that we're invested with. And happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions at all? No, so is the committee happy to again forward this on to Cabinet with no further comment?
Agreed.
And that is agreed. Thank you very much. Now we move on to agenda item 13, which is the Risk and Opportunities Management Update. And Mr. Cooper to present, please.
Thank you, Chair. The main focus of the report, I guess, is paragraph 8.1.2 on page 180. So the Risk Management Group reviewed one specific risk this time, which was the impact of antisocial behaviour on council facilities. A detailed discussion around the various situations in Letchworth, Hitchin and Royston. As you'll see in the report, there have been some progress in Letchworth, but there have then been escalation issues at Howard Park, and I see again from the headline in the newspaper today, again, some further work from the police around antisocial behaviour more widely in Letchworth as well, which I guess is A, a problem, but B, a good sign that police are reacting to it and doing something about it. Sort of extensive discussion around the Lairage car park in Hitchin, which shows improvements, but then gets worse again. And we've got a regular group meeting to discuss that car park, to look at ideas around ways of mitigating some of those incidents where we can, which ranges from looking at potential for more CCTV in the car park, through to restricting access to some of the staircases in the some of the fire escapes in the car park, so they could still use fire escapes, but an easy way for those that might be engaging in antisocial behaviour to get in easily, and also looking at ways we can stop or make it less desirable to use the car park as a place to skateboard and generally skirt around the cars and cause chaos. That's both for the antisocial behaviour impact, but also the fact that skateboarding in car parks is not safe and we want to discourage it as much as possible. Would say that that group has previously discussed the car park here in Letchworth. The incidents in that car park do seem to have reduced, so that's a good sign for that one, but they do remain there for the Lairage and Hitchin. Overall, it was considered by the group that the risk should remain scored of 7, which reflects that there is a medium impact, but a high likelihood of damage and incidents happening. So that is the sort of recommendation to the group, because it's an unchanged, not a formal recommendation, because we're not asking for a change in the risk of it. As ever, the group discusses a lot more detail about risks, risk details, and looking at kind of new and deleted risks. But unless they kind of reach the criteria for a corporate risk, they don't come to this group. But the standing invite still always stands for any members of this committee to attend the risk management group, which are held on a quarterly basis and in advance of each quarterly cycle for reports coming here. Happy to take any questions.
Just before we take questions, are we, as members of FAR and members more roundly, able to receive emails when we know the dates of those risk management meetings so that all members are aware when they are?
Yeah, I will make sure that we send out an invite for the next one, which I think has now been set for sometime in February. But I'll check the date and then get an invite down to all members of this committee and subs.
Thanks very much. Are there any questions at all in relation to the risk and opportunities management update? Councillor Weeks?
A bit flippant, I suppose, Chairman, but with regard to the top risk box on the metrics, I think we're going to need to make that bigger if we carry on like this. But can I ask why? I know the answer because it's probably in the risk committee's report, which I have at home somewhere, but why is waste management, recycling and street cleansing still up there as a top risk? My understanding is that it's all working quite well at the moment, and I don't know why it's a top risk.
I think it is due review. I think the last sort of cycle rounds, we don't think it was quite ready to be reviewed just yet, but I think the next time round, probably in February, we will review that risk about where we can come down. What we did discuss at the last risk management group was a draft sort of headline proposal around what the structure of that risk might look like in the future. You might remember from seeing it before. It was a headline risk with lots of sub-risks beneath it, and actually some of those sub-risks are service risks really, and some are corporate risks, and we want to sort of getting a sort of sounding from the group as to whether that was going in the right direction. The view was that it was, so when we bring it back to you next time, we'll see a different format of that risk that will focus more on the corporate risk elements of it, and there are some that still remain, particularly looking at the long term and the changes to waste legislation and the way that funding for it is paid for, and how we may be mandated to collect certain types of waste in certain ways, and also the County Council's waste strategy and where they may direct us to take our waste to in future. There will be elements that are still corporate risks, but there will be elements that also disappear as not being corporate risks anymore or become service risks.
Thank you. Would you like to come back?
Thank you, Jim. So I think in the past we have broken down the various constituencies of waste management, haven't we, and given them their own separate risk. But here we've grouped them all together, have we, and put them in as a top risk. Whereas if we break them down now, some of them will disappear completely.
I think for to keep this grid simple and make it not too big, we'll probably still maintain a overarching risk which will cover the various risks in it, but the focus will be on those risks that are the corporate risks and not the service risks.
Thank you. Councillor Jarvis?
I understand that. I think it's important that we're clear that the nature of that risk, although it may have the same top-level name, the nature of it will change significantly, we expect, don't we? And I think that's, I think that needs to be reflected somehow. The other question I was going to ask, so in terms of the ones that I understand have been reviewed are the ones with the little arrows. I noticed there was a review of income generation, but that concluded there was no change in the position there. Is there any more to be said about that?
Because that was a very minor review. So reviews that happen on a regular basis. We try to get them sort of to come to risk management group when we feel it's appropriate and try to keep it to one or sometimes two per meeting.
Okay.
So because the review was quite minor on that occasion, we didn't think it was worth coming back to the committee, because I think it back to the risk management group and to then on to here. I think the last time it came back to here wasn't that long ago. So I think we'll probably leave it at one or two cycles through before we bring it back round. But yes, it's been reviewed in October, and there was no change to the score at that point.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Nope. So I think noting Councillor Weeks's comments, we should also request that the waste management, recycling and street cleansing risk should be reviewed by the next FAR committee meeting. However, we'll go along with the recommendations as well, stating which are that the committee notes the review or any changes to the corporate risks for the quarter, namely the impact of antisocial behaviour on council facilities, to retain its current risk score of 7. Are we happy to agree to that?
Sorry, a bit pedantic. Can I just clarify? Reviewed by the next time we bring the risk report back, which will be in March. The next meeting is in December, as in January.
Okay.
So the next time we bring the risk report round will be in the quarter's time in March. So can we
okay.
by then rather
That's
than
fine.
Next meeting?
That's fine. Perfect. So are we happy to accept the recommendations for the report? That is agreed. Final agenda item. Are there any other future items that members would like to see brought to committee? Mr. Cooper.
I would like to bring to the meeting next time a report on the CIPFA Financial Management Code, which is a new code issued by the Chartered Institute of Public Finance and Accountancy, the coverage of which is to make sure that all local authorities have good financial management embedded in them, and I'd like to bring a report that sort of summarises the key elements of that and where we kind of at this stage rank ourselves against those, and what actions proposed to take forward to address that. Hopefully that gives the committee some assurance we have good financial management controls in place, obviously always room for some improvement, and to highlight those areas of improvement and what we're doing about them. So I'd like to bring it next time with your permission.
Yep, and you'd like to bring that into the January one?
I'll bring that to general meeting, yes.
Perfect. Are there any other agenda items that any members would like to raise? Nope. So the dates of the next meeting for FAR is Monday the 20th of January 2020, and there will be another one Monday the 16th of March 2020. The time is now 8:45, and the meeting is now closed.